Buddy, I am Brandon Sewell, the owner of Seal Pro Painting and the host of the Off the Ladder podcast. Our mission is to help home service business owners learn so that they can lead well and ultimately live life off the ladder. Today's guest is Seth Peek. He is the owner of Peek Painting and also Peek Realty. He's a residential and commercial painting contractor, and he has been in business for 5 years. And he's in California. He has 18 employees. This year, he's projected to do a little over 2 million in revenue with a 12% net profit. Seth, he lives in California with his wife Karen. Again, they own Peak Painting as well as Peak Realty. Seth is an avid fitness, surfing, and more recently, golf enthusiast. Besides work and hobbies, Seth is very involved in his local Rotary chapter as president-elect, as well as the Chamber of Commerce board. Entrepreneurship is truly Seth's passion. Talking business and growth should be added to the list of hobbies, perhaps in the next bio. So, welcome to the show, Seth. It's a pleasure to have you. The way that I was introduced to you was obviously through DYB. Last year I met was introduced to Steve Burnett, and he is now my personal coach. So that's how we got introduced. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that introduction?
No, I think that's pretty concise. I think,
Good.
yeah, I think more to come, right?
Awesome. Well, hey, the reason why I wanted to have you on here is because, just on the outside looking in, it looks like you're having great success out there. You're doing well. Steve speaks highly of you. He'll refer to you in conversation. And as I had stated before the show, the whole purpose of this is to help home service business owners to get off the ladder and work. There's the famous saying, work on your business instead of in it, right? And so just sharing the tips and strategies, the things that we have to put in place to help guys get out of that place where they're working, 7 days a week or whatever it is out there hustling, grinding on the truck, and they're out there in the field and they have this dream of, man, I'd love to just get to the place where I can work on my business and grow it, manage things. And but I know that there's a lot of obstacles to that. So before we get into everything in depth, how did you get started in the painting industry? What's your introduction to that?
Short answer is it's what a lot of my family members do. I think when I started my business, including my brother-in-law, there's five of us, five painting companies on
Oh,
the
wow.
peak in the peaks. So we had, my uncle, my dad started Peak Brothers Painting in the 1980, I think, 1979, 1980. And then Uncle Bob started his painting company in Utah in the early 80s. My dad ended up splitting off in the early 2000s and starting Ned Peak Painting. So that's three companies. And then my brother-in-law, Arturo, he has Arai Painting in San Diego. That's my sister's husband. And he started out working for my dad and then started his own. And then there's us, Peak Painting, which used to be called S Peak Painting, but we decided to streamline it, make it a little bit more easier to say and more brand, just easier to brand, just being Peak Painting. And we were happy that it wasn't registered with the state of California, so we took it. And now we're Peak Painting. And so it basically, I always had odd jobs painting with my family in high school summers. During college, I worked with my dad off and on. Before I started my business here in Atascadero on the Central Coast, I worked for another contractor, Jim Sherrill Painting here in Atascadero. And I worked for him for a couple of years. Then I applied to get my contractor's license, and here we are. So it's been 5 years, pretty much this month or coming up, the beginning of December is when I got my license. And
Nice.
so that's how I started. I mean, it wasn't really something I ever thought was I was going to do in my 20s. I always just knew, like, I knew how to paint. I could use the skill when I needed a job or like I needed a side job, I could paint someone's house. And I used it like that, but I started to kind of get laser focused in my late 20s. And when I turned 30, I really started putting the pedal to the metal and like what I wanted to do in life. And I figured might as well just do the painting thing full time in terms of starting a business, you know, not just like a paycheck job. And I really saw the value in it. And I started to attend, or I started to watch a lot of like business videos online. When I was looking to start my business, started talking to my uncles and my dad, started putting a framework together of what I was going to do. Listened to a lot of marketing, a lot of business influence and sales books on tape, on audio, on Audible. Not so much you need tape anymore. Started to educate myself when I started my business. So my first 6 months was basically just like on my own. I had a couple employees by June. That's kind of how I started rolling, you know? So I do come from a background of being a journeyman painter, I guess you would say. I mean, like I have the skills, I can paint and stain. I mean, I can do it, whatever I need to do. And it was in my family. So it was kind of like, I want to start a business. I want to make my future goals. So might as well go into painting because it's what I know how to do. And I have a framework of support in my family.
Nice. So what was kind of your, you know, so you started the business, what was your journey? Did you start out where you weren't really out doing jobs at all? Were you just focusing on the sales and marketing and you just hired guys out the gate, or were you doing jobs? What was your process there?
I hired my first guy in my fourth month. I was doing all the work myself the first 3.5 months. Okay, so the first month and a half, in order just to get income coming into the business, I subcontracted from my old boss. And so I basically worked for him full time. And then I told him in February, somewhere around my birthday, like, hey, I'm not really sure how it's going to go, but I'm going to give it a shot. And I'm going to just try to get my own work. And I knew if I didn't take myself off of the teat of like the subcontract work and like force myself to hustle, then I would just rest on my laurels and make $40 an hour subcontracting for him or whatever it was, the arrangement, the percentage. But so I basically just created some flyers and I pounded the pavement for about 3 days. Just going to real estate offices, property management offices, and the ball started rolling. And then I just started telling everybody on social media, like what I do. And I started out with heavy, like I had logos, I had a website, I had everything branded. I had my vehicle had stickers on it. My van had stickers on it. Like I started out strong. So I had the presence of, hey, this is a painting company. It's not a guy in a truck. And so I had a lot of customers, like when I did the estimate and I showed up and painted, they thought somebody else was going to be showing up to do the painting, but it was me. So I kind of presented myself like this, you know, dress up to go to the quotes. And the whole goal was to get to hire employees and to get out of the bucket. I never had any desire to paint for years and years and years, but I knew that I needed to create some sort of momentum, because in California, it's not as easy to, well, I wouldn't say it's not as easy because I don't know. All I know is California, but subcontracting is not necessarily legal unless they have a contractor's license from the state, which takes 4 years experience and a big test and a lot of bond. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. So subcontracting legally was never something I thought like would be done. So from the start, I had to hire W-2 employees if I wanted to grow the business. So that was kind of the goal. And I didn't really know how to get there. I was quoting based on how I thought my last boss did it. And, you know, talking to my dad and my uncles, I didn't really know hourly. I was kind of just thinking like, yeah, $50 an hour sounds good to me. Like, I wasn't putting any real like thought into it, but I knew that I could produce. And I made pretty good money the first 6 months and, you know, moving forward. Especially being owner operator, it was even when I had two employees, I mean, we were crushing it with three of us, just job after job. So by the second or third month I was in business, I had a month backlog and I was getting close to 2 months backlog by the summertime. And it was cruising. I had a good relationship with Benjamin Moore, the store here. And I just started creating relationships and networking. And around June of 20, what would that be? 2019. I was looking for some sort of guidance, you know, so I was going on Instagram and YouTube and looking up like business coaching and just searching painting, you know, just searching painting Instagram pages, see how people are doing their jobs and how they're, whatever they're how they're managing their crews and whatnot. And I came across DYB and I was on the homepage of dybcoach.com and who's who you're referring to in the beginning. And I was going through the testimonials and I saw my Uncle John's picture and his testimonial. And I was like, oh, if Uncle John does this, you know, I should probably check it out, you know?
Yeah.
Called him and he's like, oh yeah, get queued up. And that's when I had the coaching call or the intake call with Steve and signed up for DYB. And it was just, it was great. You know, it really dialed in my costs and my management and the whole system, yeah. Sales system and everything. So it basically skyrocketed from there in terms of like my drive to like hire and grow my crews and grow my reach and my revenue.
Got it. So, you know, it sounds like from the beginning though, you knew that was your goal. Can you speak to the mindset that it takes to go from being the person in the field to getting yourself in this place where you have the leadership to, you know, entrust others to do that work, yeah. and let go of that? And, you know, just speak to like the mindset that it takes. Cause I think a lot of guys, you know, they're so tied to the results of and controlling that, you know, they think, I can't tell you how many times I've heard even friends of mine say like, well, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done right. Like I can't find good guys cause nobody does it as good as me. You know, can you speak to that at all and how you have found great people and have let go and entrusted that with other people?
Are you a home service business owner? Do you have a strategic way to get reviews for your business on Google, Facebook, and other platforms? If you don't, then you need to implement NiceJob. Since implementing NiceJob, we have grown our reviews from 10 all the way up to over 60 reviews online in less than a year. If you're interested in using this feature in your business and growing your Google My Business reviews, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up for a free trial of NiceJob. And let me know if you sign up so I can help you to implement it and get a strategy in place with your team to get more reviews so you can start winning on Google and beating out your competition locally.
I think the first thing is to realize that a lot of times our ego tells us that we can do things better than anybody else. And it's just because we're the ones that have always done it. So there's a thing like the Superman complex, you know, and thinking that you need to jump in and like, and fix everything because you're in charge. Often in times of, I had to just go through issues where I made a big mess because I was Superman, you know, and realize that like, sometimes I make a huge mess when I try to fix a solution because I just make it more stressful to myself and to maybe if it's with the employees, with the team members, I make it more stressful in terms of the schedule, make it more stressful for my wife because I'm trying to get quotes done. I'm trying to manage the crews. I'm trying to go in and do some touch up with myself. You know, I want to go and go pick up some paint and take it to a job site because it's a rush, you know, and doing things that like in the moment I feel are reactionary that are going to fix the problem, but they end up just creating more stress. So it's just the shift that came when I realized that I have a lot more responsibility than doing day-to-day project management of materials, meeting with customers to make sure that we're doing the correct thing on the work order. Putting out fires like that is just, I have much more responsibility to my company fiscally than what that gets us in return. So once I realized that like I need to make more money or I want to make more money in doing tasks that make more money, then it was easier for me to say, I'm going to delegate that, or I'm going to train the leads to do this, So I don't have to do it anymore. Or even when I had just four guys, and so four guys kind of started getting me out of the bucket. And so the one guy was like leading the four guys. I can train him and be like, this is what you're going to do. Here's like a little bit more per hour. You're going to like talk to the customer when you get to the job site. You're going to walk through, just starting to delegate the things that, you know, we don't, as business owners, especially in a trades business, we're so full of ourselves. I honestly think we're so full of ourselves that we're like the most qualified person to do the job. I don't think customers, I'm pretty sure I know for a fact that most customers don't really care who's doing all the things that we think we need to do.
Yeah.
Especially like the job walk in the beginning of the job, you know, it's like, does it really need to be the owner of the business like coming here to say, yeah, we're going to do the paint the fascia and caulk these cracks and everything? I think most of the time the owners just think the guy that's doing the work will say, this is what I'm going to do, Mrs. Carruthers. You know, like, I'm going to do this and we're going to do that. And tonight, at the end of every day, I'm going to tell you what we've done and what we're doing tomorrow. And she's going to go, that's fantastic. You know, it's that's, I think that's what they expect. So for us to think that we need to do every single little thing, the mind shift just happened because I was driving myself crazy. I was running around like a wild man trying to do everything. And I just, something had to give. And that was delegating was the easiest thing. You know, Steve helped me do a lot of that just by, you know, getting out of my hustling smarter, like this poster behind me. You know, it's like, everyone says, oh, hustle, hustle, hustle. It's like, well, how, like hustle, you can hustle doing like BS work. You know, you can do busy work all day and you're hustling. You're I'm putting stamps on envelopes. You know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm entering data, I'm calling back customers, I'm following up with people. It's like, people can do that for you, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's really good. I mean, I have personally been in business. I'm in my seventh year right now. And I personally have not been in the field since I started. And, you know, I think one thing that has helped me is that I didn't come from a background in painting per se. Like I worked for a painting company up in Baltimore, Maryland, but I got into the painting world through sales. So I was selling for a company up in Baltimore. So, it's almost like I delegated out of necessity. It was like, well, I have to have other guys do this. I mean, I can go out and I can, like, you know, I can paint rooms, you know, paint stuff. I mean, I can do that. But as far as like spraying and some of the more like detailed stuff, that's definitely nice. But and I think what the perspective that that gives me is, we have a great reputation, right? We've never had a terrible reputation. I'm not the one out there doing all the work, but these guys are amazing. They're capable. They're responsible. They take care of our customers, and it's not like I have to be there to babysit for our customers to get a great job, get great customer service and great workmanship. So I think it's, like you said, a lot of guys just have this like Superman syndrome. Like, if it's not me, then it's going to be what it should be. Explain to us, what is your hiring, training, onboarding process? You know, you've got 18 guys. For the people out there who are wanting to hire even their first employee, what kind of recommendations do you have as far as systems and processes for even getting people in the door, making sure that they're qualified and a good fit for your company?
That's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. Well, let's just start with hiring. Let's just unpack, like, what is your process for hiring?
So we have standing like ads, hiring ads, right? Renewed standing hiring ads. Over the years, I've used Indeed, Facebook, Craigslist, flyers at the paint store. Our two biggest our two biggest ways to hire that historically the last couple of years has been our incentive-based hiring, which is the best, and Craigslist. But Craigslist has to be a very good, you know, worded ad. Doesn't sound super stuffy, you know, just something that attracts like good quality all-star employees. The incentive-based hiring is where we get the best employees because we're getting our employees are referring friends or past coworkers or acquaintances that they have worked with or people they know, like, and trust, you know,
yeah,
to come work for us. And then we give them an incentive. So it started out a little differently. And now we found that the best way to do the incentive is it's basically $800. So, but it starts out after 90 days when they make their probation. So when the new hire is referred by, let's say Junior refers Mario, and Mario's works for us for 90 days. So the next pay period after 90 days, Junior gets $200 bonus on his check. And then every month for 4 months after that, as long as Mario's still there, he gets another $200. So it ends up being an $800 bonus per hire. So I think we have at least six current employees out of 18 that came through this system. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it makes the guys that are hungry, it makes them hunt, you know?
Yeah.
It makes them hunt for good employees. I think Junior has brought us maybe four in the past year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that's so great.
He's a $2,400 raise this year, you know, in 12 months.
Yeah, that's good.
That's pretty good, right? So that's probably the best way. I know other employees as well have brought us referrals. A couple of my other guys have brought us maybe two or three the past few years.
Yeah.
So that's number one. And so hiring is basically, and we have Craigslist ad and people will apply through there. We use monday.com as our pretty much our company brain. Mm-hmm. And we have like an all-star job application form, kind of like a Google form that feeds into a spreadsheet looking group on Monday. And then we just call them once they apply through the link, if it's an online or our employees will text their friends the link or the links on a flyer in Sherwin-Williams or in Benjamin Moore. And they go into that process. We call them, we bring them in for an interview after chatting with them on the phone for a little bit. We ask them a series of questions. And sometimes depending on if it's my brother, Ryan, or myself, Ryan's operations manager, I'm sales and marketing and kind of the visionary, he's an integrator. And if one of us is interviewing him, it's a little different style, but we ask pretty much similar questions. More recently, it's been more Ryan as the operations. I'm letting the reins go a little bit more back to the delegation there, you know, thinking, yeah, I don't have to be the gate that allows people to come into the company any longer.
Sure, sure.
His background is operations management for a big brewery, and he's, you know, he's had like 100 people under him before, and so he's a hiring guy, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we bring him in, and then we basically give him, usually we don't let him know right then and there, but we say, you know, in a day or so we'll get back to you. And if we end up bringing him on, we go through a PEO, which is like a professional, I think it's a professional employers organization, and they're like a leasing company. So they handle our HR, our background checks, our drug testing, safety coordination, OSHA, Cal OSHA. They do all that kind of back end things.
Nice.
Under 50 employees, it's not very financially responsible to have an HR director and like a safety coordinator.
Yeah.
And,
you know?
So we have a BBSI does that. BBSI is nationwide. I know a lot of friends in different states that use BBSI. So we use them, and they go through, when they get hired on their first day, they come in, we download all the apps. We show them how to use ClockShark, Monday, GroupMe, you know, different apps. We have a series of checklists. The new hire checklist goes over our code of conduct and how we operate as a business, but also what's expected of them. And then we go over the first two safety trainings, which are generally ladders. And what are the two biggest ones? Slips and falls and ladders. And mm-hmm. if in the summer we do heat illness prevention, which is a big one in California, especially when it's 100 degrees often here in the summertime and in my part of the state. And so we go through a series of just like trainings. It takes about a couple hours, their first day of that sort of thing. If they're brand new, they're issued a grip. The grip is going to be like a hand masker, a caulking gun. Broad strokes, we give them a lot of the basic tools you need to prep. And we give them maybe one paintbrush and a bucket and some other stuff, you know, blades and stuff. And they're assigned a lead. Now, we don't put them through like a class, like a series of classes right away, like this is how you paint a house. We assign them to a strong lead who will basically spend time with them every day for on each thing that they're doing and getting them up to speed over time with that. Now, what we have is we've got like between apprentice and a team leader, we have four different job descriptions that are, you know, two pages of bullet points of what's expected on each role and what mm-hmm. the pay scales are. So if we bring someone in as an apprentice, we say, okay, so here's your track. You know, you have to be able to accomplish everything on the apprentice checklist, verified by your team leader and the operations manager. And once you can do that, then we bring you to $21 an hour. You know, apprentice in our area, we do 18 to 20 bucks an hour. So mm-hmm. 21 bucks an hour will be painter one. And that's like someone who's like proficient in brushing and rolling, prepping. Maybe they know how to like do some a little bit more. They know how to clean the airless pump proficiently. And so we get into a new checklist. And so we show them from the start when they come work for Peak Painting, like, this is where you're starting. This is what we're going to pay. And then this is where you're allowed to go. You know, you could be making within a few years, you could be making 30, 32 bucks an hour, depending on how mm-hmm. far you go and how fast you learn.
Yeah.
So we kind of give them a track like that. And then we provide training. We say, if you want to be able to do any of these things and your team leader, there's not an opportunity. We're not doing a job that's using this tool, or we're not doing a job that is like a stained varnish door. Come see me. And generally myself, I kind of act as the trainer. If there's certain things that the team leader doesn't have the resources to teach somebody how to do, or if somebody wants like some one-on-one training with me, then I'm more than happy to do that. I'm leaving something out. I can't remember what it is, but something to do with the hiring process. Oh, we do a 90-day probation period. So we usually start at a wage, and then after 90 days, they're evaluated for an immediate rise. So someone could start, and then 90 days later, they can make 50 cents to a dollar more an hour. So it's better than waiting a whole year for a raise or a merit raise system, where it's like all of a sudden it's 6 months later. You know, we have the ability to give somebody a random raise, but it's not like, it's not months and months and months later, if they're doing well, that they can get immediate raise. So hiring process is kind of like that. With definitely background checks, and definitely laying out what we're all about and where they can go and how much they can make and what, how much part of the team they can be. Right out the gate.
That's all such amazing information. And, you know, one thing that I've always made as a standard for myself is, and I've been trying to work this into my personal mindset, is get out of the habit of saying, I can't find good help, and start saying, well, and, you know, what am I doing to get better people? Right. I know Steve just had a guy on his podcast. I can't remember his name, but he was, you know, saying kind of a similar thing, like, if you're not getting those good people, are you attracting them? And right. I think a lot of these things that you're talking about are the things that we need to have in place to attract those all-star players. And, you know, it's like, I consider myself, not in like a cocky way, but I consider myself to be like a all-star type of person. You know, I'm driven. I want to accomplish great things. I want to push myself to be better. And I'm always striving for more. And I think to myself, like, how would I feel if I found this company and they wanted me to work for them? What kind of image would they portray? Would they portray this image of being organized and having their stuff together and, you know, having a growth track, having a career plan? Is there opportunity for me to grow here? And if I didn't feel like that, if I felt like it was just like, hey, meet me at the back of my truck at, you know, 9 a.m. tomorrow at so-and-so random address, and you're like scratching notes on a, you know, used napkin from your morning donut, you know, it's just, what we put off is going to be important in that process of attracting the right people. So I love right. that you have those systems and processes in place, because I think that's what, you know, the home service industry, you know, guys who want to get to that place, They have to be willing to put the time and effort in to get those systems there. So
I think it's also, it's good to mention that, you know, I didn't, when I was me and I was hiring my first few people, there were certain learning curve things I had to do. But one thing I did from the start was I had uniform. I had shirts with our logos on it. I, even with my first handful of guys, the first summer, made it super professional. So when the guys went to work, they looked like they were professional. They worked for Peak Painting. You know, when we did the hiring process, we actually went through the paperwork together to fill out for, you know, W-2 taxes. We went through kind of what the job was going to entail. I started out with a timekeeping program. Like I didn't start out just winging it. So sure. I think it's important, but at the same time, I didn't have all the safety training and job site checklists and job description things right. all laid out in the first year of my business. So it's important to know. A lot of times when I was listening to podcasts like this, when I was newer and I was trying to get a grasp on my business, I was thinking like, there's no way someone was like out the game doing this stuff.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
Small incremental changes. And if I was going to go back in time and do one thing like from the start, rather than like everything else I just laid out, one thing from the start was doing something as serious as like background check, drug test, and like a new hire checklist, going over your company code of conduct. If you had those three things, which are relatively low barriers to get over, if you start out with that, one thing that'll do is it'll show that your candidates that you're a serious like business owner that wants to have quality employees.
Yeah.
So someone who's clean, you know, not on drugs, someone who's clean might go like, dude, I want to work here because this is like they value whether or not someone is like a junkie or not, or, you know, smokes a bunch of pot, drinks all the time. So they might refer their friends or someone they know like, hey, man, this is a good place to work. This is not, there's not a bunch of losers working here. So if I was going to do something from the start, I would do that again. I would definitely drug test and backgrounds, but also just having the new hire checklist and like the code of conduct review. It's very easy to make a very simple, like, these are our core values. This is how we conduct ourselves. This is how we communicate with customers. This is what we do on a job site on a daily basis in terms of customer communication. Just from that, just having that alone will set you apart during like the onboarding when you're starting hiring.
Yeah, that's really good. I obviously over time have, you know, developed my hiring process, and I can definitely attest to what you're saying, that those things that you're saying are so key. I mean, and what I'll add to that is making sure that you can communicate clearly your mission and your values as a company. So people know like, okay, this is who I'm coming from or coming to work for, and this is what they stand for. A really big thing for me that I've always done was KPIs, just for each position. So just when a guy came in, I was able to clearly tell him like, hey, this is what your job is. This is your responsibilities. This is everything that you're going to be doing in this role. And then I would say, you know, lastly, just kind of like what you were saying, a really quick run through of like the conduct. We have our employee policy manual that we walk through with our guys who are being onboarded, and that's a game changer. You know, I'll just add really quick that a lot of those things I learned when Steve became my coach. So that was a real big game changer for me implementing more of that stuff. We do the incentives as well. Ours is a little bit different. We do 250 when the person first brings them on. So like as soon as they get hired, we do 250. And then once the person makes it to their 90 days, we give them another 250. So we do 500. It's not 800, but it's just two separate payments, if you will. And my lead guy, he loves it, you know, like he's already made an extra $1,000 this year just from bringing on guys. So, I love that.
Yeah.
So that covers a lot there, hiring, onboarding, the training. Let's jump into this really quick before we, come to a close. You know, you have 18 guys, with bringing on those new people. you're going to have a process for having like the equipment that they need, you know, whether that's, you know, trucks, sprayers, ladders, brushes. I don't know everything that you provide, but can you walk through kind of the process of growing and, you know, what it looks like going from your first crew to a second crew, a third crew, and if you guys have like a system process for that?
Are you a home service business owner that is trying to get off the ladder and work on your business instead of in it? Well, you need a robust CRM that is going to help your business to be more efficient and streamlined so that you can get your time back to focus on things that are going to help your business grow. Now, Jobber is going to help you to manage your client requests, your quotes, your jobs, and your invoicing. You can do everything all in one place and manage everything from start to finish. And not to mention Jobber payments. You don't have to chase around checks, try to go and collect cash, or wait for checks to come in the mail anymore. You can just get paid right on the spot with Jobber payments. If you're interested in implementing Jobber into your business, click on the show notes below and sign up for a free trial of Jobber. That's not it. Reach out to me. I want to help make sure that you maximize everything that Jobber has to offer so that you can get your business growing right away. Thank you so much. And let's get back to the Off the Ladder podcast.
The short and quick and dirty answer is if we're booked 6 weeks or more, we hire and we create a crew.
Okay.
The best way to do it is every crew has the best way I can explain it. I'm not saying the best way to do it, but the best way we found is each team has their own equipment assigned to the team. And so we use AirTags for the higher dollar items like sprayers and pressure washers. And so we have them all cataloged on our iCloud in terms of what power washer, what sprayer, what serial numbers are assigned to which crew and where they are, like physically where they are. Our crews, so that's a really cool tool there. We provide everything except for paintbrushes and then hand tools. So everyone should have their own grip, like a bucket or a tool bag with a hand mask or a caulking gun. Paintbrushes, scrapers, 5-in-1s. Not saying we don't buy them every once in a while. And if you're new, we supply a lot of that stuff. But if you're a painter too, or a team lead, or a working foreman, you should have tools of your trade that belong to you. You take better care of it. So we provide ladders, drop cloths, primer. I mean, we provide the materials. We provide the sprayers, the pressure washers, the uniform. So growing the company, you know, once we got to 4 employees, then that pretty much replaced my on the ladder salary. So we created 2 teams the end of 2019. I had the red and blue team, I think, and there was 2 and 2. There's 2 guys, and then we had a 5th guy, and then we had a 6th guy before the end of the year. So I had 6 employees my first year at the end, and then basically we went for the 2-man model. So we've always had 2-man teams. We find it's very efficient to have a lead and a helper, or a lead and a painter 1, or even a lead and a painter 2, and have a super team. That's like that's like the dream team, the basketball team. You know, it's like you got a 2 journeymen working together, and one of them happens to be a better leader, but they just crush it.
Yeah.
So anytime we're booked over 6 weeks, we try to form a new team and make a hire. Generally, and feel free to interrupt me if I'm not answering your question correctly.
Well, so I will just interject this really quick. I think a big thing that like even I think about, and maybe some people that might be listening to what you're saying, is can you hit on transportation? Are guys using their own trucks? Are you guys purchasing vans? How are you going about that?
So we have trucks and vans for I think 7 team leaders. So 7 teams have trucks and vans, and then we have a couple trailers. So basically the team leader has a van or a trailer. Basically the older team leaders, the more senior ones, they have truck or a van, they have a gas card. It's a company vehicle, has our logos on it. They take it home at night. It's easier for us and better advertising to have them roll around, not bring it back to the shop every day. Plus you're dealing with, do you clock in when you get to the shop? Do you get in the van? The guys get in the van, they all clock in, then they drive to the job site. California rules are different. So yeah. It's just better for them to go home. And so we have seven of those. Then we have myself and a salesperson have a wrapped Prius and a wrapped Renegade. And then my brother has like a his operations vehicle is like a Ford, like a 2023 Ford Ranger, just like a mid-sized pickup truck. Mm-hmm. And then we have box trailers. So the guys that use box trailers as an incentive for them, the team leaders that work out of box trailers, obviously we move the trailers to the jobs, but we typically put them on 100 hours or more jobs. So that way we're not spending our days just moving trailers around all the time.
Sure.
So for the next few crews that we do, they're going to be trailers. Just because of an insurance breakpoint, we kind of want to do 75-25, 75% vehicles, 25% trailers. Just because of the insurance breakpoint, it makes sense. And what we'll do is the newer team leaders will be operating out of trailers. And then as they senior, they age into an older position, then we will provide them with a van or a truck. And so it's almost like a trial period. Now, what they do, the guys that have trailers, they still, people say, well, what if they need tape in the middle of the day? Or what if they need to go to the shop to pick up some, a fiber of stock primer? Well, what we do for those guys is that we don't give them, they're not under insurance, but they have their own, a lot of those guys have their own vehicles, obviously.
Yeah.
We get $15 a day as a gas reimbursement on their check. So what it does is it goes, hey, you don't have a company vehicle, but you have this trailer. We're going to stock it. We're going to move it for you. But if you need any incidental trips during the day, here's $15 for that. And that also contributes to them getting to and from the job site anyway. So it's a little bit of an incentive for the team leaders that are operating out of a trailer and have to drive their own vehicle. And that's the way we go about it. But ideally, we always have trailers because there's a good, some jobs are huge and they're there for like 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And it's better just to have a job site trailer there full of our stuff in case it drizzles or, you know, it's just too hot out or it's just a big billboard in the front of the house. So we utilize the trailers. We're picking up another one tomorrow, actually, nice. 6x12. And that's how we do it. I think the guys that have the trucks and the vans, they really like it because they spend their whole week in their truck and their van. They don't spend personal gas money and they're saving a lot of money. It's a good incentive, but that's how we do transportation for sure.
Now, how are you, as far as these company vehicles are concerned, if you don't mind, can you share how you're finding them? Are you paying cash? Are you financing them? Is there a particular like make model that you look for, certain amount of mileage? Can you kind of go into like, is there any type of like strategy there? Or is it just as a need comes up, you find what's available and, you know, just go from there?
Yeah. So before COVID, buying vans and trucks cash made sense because you can get them for like $8,000 to $12,000. After COVID and the microchips and like just the cost of inflation of vehicles went through the roof. So we financed my sales vehicle, my little Jeep Renegade. We financed a couple, but we got really good deals and we put like half down. So we put like $12,000 down and our payments are like $275 a month. So it just makes a little bit more sense. I don't recommend, I've never done like a full, like zero down. I think that's really awesome use of your cash on a monthly basis, but we have like two Ford Rangers and a Chevy Silverado that are white. And, I mean, they're probably aging out this year. We have 150,000, 175,000 miles and they're getting a little hammered. But we bought those cash for like $7,000 to $9,000. I've got a couple little cargo vans. I've got a big ProMaster van. I paid cash for that, like 20 grand. It's just basically like, if you grow enough to where your profit is coming in and you have like the backlog of 6 weeks of work and you need to create a crew and you have the money in your liquid savings account. We keep two savings accounts. We have a solid saver and a liquid saver. Solid savers for like emergencies, and any weird tax bill that you didn't know was coming, you know, just anything that's like, you tap into it like once every 6 months if you need to.
Yeah.
And the liquid savers for vehicles and equipment and any other things like, hey, we want to sponsor this event. Let's grab $3,000 out of liquid, give it to the high school, blah, blah, blah. That's what our liquid savers for. So When you get to the point where you need to grow into another crew and your backlog 6 weeks and you have your liquid savings of $12,000 in there, then you can determine whether or not you want to buy a truck with 150,000 miles on it for 12,000, or you want to buy a van with 60,000 miles on it that's 20 grand and just have like a small monthly payment. I'm not totally adverse to having financing on some stuff, but only vehicles. I mean, I would never put an airless sprayer on a Sherwin payment plan. It's just like, you know, you should be able to buy that stuff, put it on your account and paying it off monthly. But yeah, it's a mixture of cash and financing depending on the market. You know, during Obama, during different presidencies, like cars went like crazy through the roof, or, you know, availability was super through the roof or down. In depending on like the season is how you should dictate how you buy something. Yeah. And the first month of COVID, you could get 0% interest on a van. I didn't do it because I was honestly, I was probably insecure about what was happening. But I know my dad bought a van for 0% down, 0% interest. And it's like, why wouldn't you do that? You know,
yeah.
It makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a mixture. It just depends on what your cash flow is at any given time.
That's good. We got time for one more question. With the vehicles that you're purchasing, I know you mentioned they're branded and all that. Are you doing full wraps, or are you just doing pretty minimal, just lettering and things like that?
Put it this way. When they're going down the road, you know whose company it is, but it's not a full wrap. I think a full wrap, I think wraps are, I think sometimes they're too, all right, I'm going to go personal opinion.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
Sometimes they're too cartoonish and they're like, whoa, wow, you know, like all this color and just like all this, and they're not as noticeable as big bold letters of like Peak Painting with my logo on the side of a van. You know, it's just like, boom, the logo, Peak Painting, the website. It's just like, it stands out. We have we just got our Prius rewrapped, which is our residential sales vehicle. And we had it done, but I was very clear. I'm like, I want the gradient of yellow and green, but I just want it to say Peak Painting and with our website and very minimal, not like a bunch of phone numbers and all these other things, just very clean. And so from now on, that's what we do. But all our field trucks and vans are just logos. There's a logo on the side, there's a logo on the back, there's a logo on the other side. And then there's like a hood badge with our, like the actual green and yellow house, which is just our logo.
Yeah.
So, and I think when you're running down the street and you see it drive by from 50, 60 yards away, you can read it. And guess what? It's 25% of the cost of wrapping a van. We're talking.
Oh yeah.
Around here, wrapping a Prius was $5,000. Like,
oh yeah.
So if you just get like transfer stickers for a vehicle that are big enough to read, and it's not like in weird cursive writing, or it's, you know,
yeah,
it's like six, maybe $1,200, maybe $1,300
nice
for a vehicle. So that's what I recommend. We got time for one more.
I'll just say this. I, you know, on all of the trucks that I've had, my trailer that I have, I've never done more than like what you said, a logo and some lettering and like our number and website, and that's it. And you know, it's worked out well for me. I think of some of, like, there's a really, one of my friends owns a really successful roofing company in Orlando. Yeah. And I mean, they're like doing over 30 million in revenue. Great company. But all they put is just, it's a circle that's maybe like 12 inches in diameter. And it's all it has is just the J from their company logo. That's it. And there, everybody knows what a Janney Roofing truck is, you know, just by that logo.
Yeah.
And that's all they have. So all their vehicles are just plain white trucks, vans, whatever, and then their logo on the door.
Well, the idea, the way we're building our businesses, because we have Peak Realty, Peak Painting, the idea is that whenever we start businesses from now on, there'll be Peak something, right?
If
you know, business partner with my brother, my wife, my sister-in-law, you know, that's our last name. So I think a lot of people, you know, especially in my area, we have our radio commercial. We're the Peak Brothers. You know, it's very good. We emphasize the word Peak. And so having our logos and our name everywhere, just basically the word Peak, which is not a common name. It's not a common word to see like in a business. Right. Mm-hmm. And so with that font and that logo, and our real estate logo looks very similar. It's very same font, has a house logo, red, white, and blue, sort of similar, kind of like, I think Jason Paris's companies, they all kind of look the same. And yeah. I like the idea of having continuity in your brands. And so moving forward, Peak Painting, Peak Realty, Peak X, Y, and Z, it's more recognizable. And that's all you need. The wraps are cool. They can be really classy, but they also, just to me personally, sometimes they look a little overwhelming and hard to read when there's all these colors everywhere. Just put your name, bam, right in front of someone's face in huge font, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
A little bit longer and it's cheaper.
Sure. So if I had one more question, it would be this. What does the future look like for Peak Painting? What are some of your long-term goals? What do you ultimately want to accomplish with Peak Painting, and what are you doing to get there?
So we have revenue goals for the next 3, 5, 10 years. But I don't think over like something like this, it's not as important. Like, but we're, in terms of branching out, Ryan, my brother, recently went to the commercial expo for the Painting Contractors Association in Nashville. And we do a fair amount of HOA property management and commercial building painting now. Fair amount for us is probably in the realm of like 400,000 this year, which is more than last year percentage wise. And I would say that we're branching out more into commercial, to where by next summer, we have some contracts coming up in late winter, early spring, that are fairly decent sized commercial projects. And so Ryan is really working on formulating like a commercial division. So what that would look like, maybe that would be certified payroll for some prevailing wage jobs. And also we're getting more into the online bidding platforms like PlanHub and different things like that. So Ryan's really working on formulating that, and I will be more the overseeing the business on the residential repaint side of things. Nice. You know, we have one salesperson. He's moving to Hawaii next week. David's been a crusher, but he's moving to Hawaii next week. So I hired another one. She's an awesome salesperson from the solar industry. And she's starting January 1st. So I'm doing all the residential sales between now and then, which is a heavy workload. But our goals are basically Ryan and I creating the painting company to be self-sufficient within the next 5 years, to where we, you know, we come in for a few hours a week to check on numbers and hold meetings and check on the experience, but branch out and start another business that's in the Peak umbrella. But we really like what we do. You know, Ryan's been he joined me earlier this year, and we mesh well together, you know, operation, sales, you know, he's integrator, I'm visionary, if you follow like a traction model. And I really think it's going to be, it's going to be really fun next few years. And I'm really looking forward to how we grow. I think revenue wise, it should be close to maybe 2.2 this year after all, and maybe close to 6, maybe 2.5, but we're going to be going up to the next couple of years, probably in the 5 range is what we're planning for. Really dialing in our systems, processes, our training, and reducing liabilities in terms of training and safety training and just overall customer experience. You know, we're at what, 2 to 2.5 million in revenue, and our advertising budget's like 3% or less, which is like unheard of.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Everybody says, oh, you need 10% to grow a business. It's like, well,
yeah.
Or you just have to have great customer service and stay in touch with people, right?
Yeah, yeah. Tap into that. You know, Steve talks about that all the time. It's like, you know, your current clients, and just staying top of mind with them. And
don't sleep on, like, you got to be proactive in your community. You have to go to network, you know, Rotary Chamber, volunteer work, just go to high school sports booster parties, you know, put your banner on the wall for $400 and go and talk to people. It's like things like that really go far, really. So
that's awesome. Well, Seth, I really appreciate your time. It's been inspiring talking to you and hearing, you know, all that you're doing out there. And I look forward to seeing your continued success.
Thanks, Brandon.
And seeing you hit those goals and Maybe at some point I'll have to have you back on here to talk about, where you guys are down the road. That'll be cool. But yeah, thank you so much. And for anyone who's watching this, if you've enjoyed this episode, please like, subscribe, comment, share it with somebody, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Off the Ladder podcast.